Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest episodes from today's science fiction television. I'm Master Jedi Steve.
And I'm Chris.
Chris, it feels good to be back behind the mic for the first time in nearly a month.
I know, it's been a while. I've been looking forward to this.
We both have been crazy busy. We had to finish up each of our semesters. Yours finished up a couple days ago. Mine was about a week ago.
Yeah, mine was, I actually finished mine yesterday. I had to get my final paper done for my last class, and then it took literally the entire day from 6 in the morning to 9 at night. So, I mean, that was a fun day.
Yeah, I always hated those days. I hate putting off crap like that until the last minute, because then you feel like you lose the whole day. Whereas if you work a couple hours here, a couple hours there, you know, next thing you know, it's done.
Yeah, I know, but it requires so much readings, because I have to actually cite examples from books, and then I have to get, you know, I have to go through all the books, and I have to actually read all the books, and they're not like little books, they're novels, and I ended up using 4 different books to cite my paper. So I mean, it's a lot to go through.
Oh, trust me, I know. My final paper was like 15 pages and probably 15 different sources. So I know the feeling.
Yeah, which one was that on? Was that the one on cryptocurrencies?
No, that was a couple semesters ago. This one was just a auditing paper that I did.
Oh, okay.
The cryptocurrencies was actually like, I think it was a 20-plus page paper, and easily had 25 different references.
Well, but I mean, you are a grad student. I'm an undergrad student, so.
Yeah, being a grad student, I have a paper, at least a paper or two in just about every class, and, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 pages, so I'm kind of getting used to it.
Granted, I mean, I am doing a lot of history, and my class was actually a graduate-level history class. They were offering it both as an undergrad and a graduate, so, I mean, it was a tough course.
Yeah, that's not always fun.
All right, well, that's enough about school. Why don't we jump into this week's episode?
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
So, what do we got in store for us this week, Steve?
Today's episode, we are going over Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 6, entitled The Impossible Box.
Impossible Box. I wonder why was it titled The Impossible Box? I mean, is it because they're going to be on the Borg cube pretty much the entire time?
I think so. I don't know. The previous 5 episodes, you can kind of get an idea of why they're titled what they are. But thinking back on this one, I don't really... I mean, I guess, you know, they're doing some impossible work and it's a cube. So, yeah, that could be why it's titled that. Honestly, didn't think about it too much.
I didn't either. It just kind of dawned on me right now. So, and then... I mean, whenever I think of the impossible box, like, I don't know why, but I'm thinking of just like a girl who just is kind of a prude and doesn't open up, you know?
Oh,
You know,
wow, we're on totally different spectrums.
I know. That's just what popped in my head. So
when I think of impossible box, I think of a fucking Rubik's cube and how I can never solve one.
Oh, that's why it's called the impossible box. Okay, they do explain it later in the episode. Okay.
Well, I threw a Rubik's cube in there, now it's all clicking.
Yeah, I know. Right. Well, I was thinking impossible box just because they bang so much. You know, I mean, the episode starts with, you know, Soji having a flashback or a dream and waking up in bed together with them. So, I mean, it's like, hey, it's not that, you know, much of a far fetch.
Yeah. Yeah, so. No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, I just two and two just clicked together. That was.
I know. I even wrote that down in my notes for later in the episode. So, I mean, I thought that was funny. That's it's amazing how it just clicked.
Right.
Light bulbs turned on, people. That's what it sounds like.
Oh, and they turned on so hard that it wasn't even funny. They didn't just turn on. They, like, turned on with so much power that they bursted.
What are we talking about?
The light bulbs.
What's bursting now? You know, okay. It seems like it was going in a weird direction there for a second. But okay, I get where you're going with it.
No. Okay.
All right. Well,
so let's go ahead and talk about this episode a little bit.
Yeah. Speaking of shit bursting, so they were woken up together in bed.
Yeah, which is weird because I'm pretty sure when we left them in episode 5, she was pretty pissed off at him.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess she got over it.
I guess so. He probably did more of that smooth talking, whispering in her ear. I think I'm in love with you.
Well, maybe she's just a horny little android.
It could be. Yeah. Could be. I wonder how they do that. Do they put pheromones or whatever, hormones in an android to get them all wound up and
ready to bone? Yeah, how do they get horny? Like, because obviously she gets horny, like she bangs them every episode.
Right, because I know Data just flips the switch, so I don't know. I'm curious about her construction and her anatomy on how that works. And
that could be another question we ask Brett Spinner.
Yeah. Well, Brett Spinner's question is pretty easy. It's the actress who plays Soji that we would have to ask. You know, what's the physiology and anatomy of this of your character?
Oh yeah, that would be another interesting question.
Maybe they'll go into that in future episodes or maybe future seasons if they decide to go there.
I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting. I'd like to see how they would take that, but it'd almost be kind of weird in a sense, like R-rated or TV MA-rated Star Trek.
Well, no, I'm not talking about like a Star Trek porno. I'm just talking about, you know, going into her anatomy and more on her construction.
I could just imagine the Varsity Blues be like penis, 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 vagina, vagina, vagina.
Yeah,
that's what I imagine.
Don't need
like the sex ed from.
we don't need that. We it's more of an anatomy physiology type situation going on.
So like some schematics, not sex breakdown.
Yeah, it's not synthetic sex ed.
That would be interesting. That'd be a fun. That'd be an interesting class. You know what? I wonder if they would actually have that class at the academy. I mean, like the doc, she's a expert in cybernetics. Do they have a class on robotic sexual education?
Probably, but not now. But I imagine 20 years after this timeline takes place, I could see a synthetic anatomy, physiology, and sex education class.
Yeah, I mean, especially like how many, you know, synthetics there were in the beginning of it, like before the ban. Apparently there was a lot to ban them, you know, for it to be necessary to ban them. So I mean, you never know.
No, that'd be interesting.
I mean, hell, we got sex robots today. I mean, they can't have sex robots in the future.
That's totally different. I feel like we're on till, you know, you're at the start of the book and I'm at the end of the book, not on different pages but different chapters.
Right. I'm just saying.
All righty then. So this episode opens with a pretty interesting dream sequence that Soji's having, which is it's a pretty important dream because they do dive into that later in the episode. But from what in the scene, to paint a picture, is it's like you said, Narek and Soji in bed again, and they're having their little pillow talk, and you kind of find out that Romulans have three different names.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. I've never heard of that before. So that's all Star Trek Picard, that three name thing.
Well, all right. Well, then they're I won't say changing up canon, but probably adding to the Romulan canon that was already existed in prior franchises.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of information on the Romulan Empire. Like, you get a lot of little bits, you know, little snips of information, but you don't really get a lot of detailed, you know, a lot of details on their culture like you do with the Klingons or other species or the you know, like the Vulcans. So they're kind of a mystery.
Yeah, and I feel like this episode, or not only this episode, but so far in the season, we've kind of dove deeper into the Romulan culture and kind of got a better understanding of their day-to-day life, because, you know, they have three names. They have a common name, they have a name that their family calls them by, and then they have a secret name that only their soulmate knows.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, I mean, that's like we kind of do something similar. Like, I have a common name, Chris. That's kind of a nickname. It's not my real name. It's my full name's Christopher. That's what my family usually calls me. And then, you know, my lover calls me Daddy. So, I mean, like, I don't know, some people do that, or Poppy, or, you know. So, you know, maybe it's not that weird
when you think about it. You didn't have to go there.
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised. Jesus. I mean, like, I am Mexican, so.
We're half Mexican, not full-blown blooded Latinos.
I mean, it's still, but, like, okay, a good portion, I mean, Mexican, but I mean,
yeah, you went there. You went there.
So, I mean, it's like not totally uncommon. Like, it doesn't, like,
I mean, I guess it's different to be called different things, but to have, you know, a certain group of people know you by one name, a certain group of people know you by another name,
right?
And then, you know, it's not a, it's where Daddy is like a nickname or a title. It's not a name.
I think the direction they were trying to go with it was more like in The Next Generation, to where Riker and Troy would call each other Munzari. And Munzari is a Bajoran word, which means my beloved. You know, what they would call each other. I think it's supposed to be more like, maybe more like towards that.
No, I mean, I don't know. It seems like it's more than just, you know, pet names, nicknames, and other things. This is like Romulans have three official names versus whatever people might be calling you in the bedroom, which we're not getting into.
Well, I mean, even in that aspect, it would still make sense, you know, to have that third name just to be for someone that supposedly is supposed to be your soulmate, just so that way they understand you more and they know it. I think it's more of a representation of, like, understanding each other, like knowing who they really are, and that's probably why they do it. And that's why I was trying to make it like a big deal in the show.
Like I said, it's a weird thing because, you know, we don't have that type of thing. We have first, middle, last name, but it seems like they have three different first names.
That would be interesting, though, if they have, like, how we have three names, but they only use their first name as for the common, like for everybody else to say. Their middle name is for family and everyone else, and the last part of their name is just for only for like their soulmate or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so that very well could be.
Parts of it. That'd be interesting. All right, well, let's move on to the next scene.
Let's start talking about more of the episode.
Yeah, more than just, you know, Soji getting banged. In the next scene, you have a conversation going on between Picard, Gerard, Elnor, and Elnor's kind of starting to, you know, he's starting to pick things up. He's kind of pretty observant.
Yeah, you learn a lot. You learn a lot about Elnor in this episode, and it's really subtle things that you pick up on. You mean Dr. Girardi and Picard are having a conversation. Elnor kind of butts in, and then
he can't see you're also haunted by something you'd like to forget. Was I in, buddy?
That time, yes.
You know, the conversation goes through, and then you kind of realize that Elnor is picking up on Girardi's secret. Not specifically her secret, but that he's picking up that she's hiding something, because he specifically says, well, it seems like there's something that you don't want to know. Or don't want Picard to know.
Yeah, well, I mean, he ain't wrong. I mean, she did just, you know, murder the guy she used to bang, so...
Yeah.
I mean, he's a pretty observant little, you know, pretty observant little spitfuck. And he's very honest about it, too. When he sees something, he won't be afraid to call it out.
Oh no, he grew up in that warrior nunnery where, remember, last episode called Absolute Cantor. There's no filter on those son of bitches.
Mm-hmm. It's called the what was it? The Kuat Milat.
Kuat Minla.
Yeah, Minlet.
Minlet.
Milat.
Kuat Minla.
Something like that. That's what.
Something like that.
That's Romulan. Romulan's a tough language, anyways.
Yeah, that's his little group where they don't have filters and they're pretty badassy warriors.
Yep. But I guess they just don't know a lot about the real world, so they're just kind of picking it up as they go, apparently. Or maybe it's just because he's been there since he was a little kid. He just doesn't.
Yeah, he seems like he has some social awkwardness to him.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny. The social awkwardness can kind of be funny. Like, are they trying to make him the comic relief?
Kind of a little bit. He's kind of the comic relief and, you know, I think what the average fan can relate to, because he's kind of thrown into the situation where he doesn't know much of what's going on. He just knows that he's helping Picard with what he believes is a lost cause. So I think he's supposed to be the relatable kind of, you know, they explain things to the audience through Elnor.
Right. Something that I noticed when rewatching the Clone Wars is they would really explain the plot just by actually telling people what it is, and that kind of explanation, just so people don't try and overthink it. And I think that's what Elnor is trying to do in this role.
Yeah, and I think in the entertainment business, it's one of those where they create a character that's either dumb or just not knowledgeable, so they explain what's going on to him.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're really doing is explaining it to the audience so the audience knows what's going on.
Right.
I don't know what that's called. I just know they do it.
I have no idea either. I mean, I would be an actor or a director, which I'm not. So I think at this point they figured out that Soji's on the Borg cube. I'm trying to understand that myself, why exactly she was on the Borg cube. Like, if the purpose of, you know, Soji was trying to figure out what happened with the synth ban, like, why exactly is she on the Borg cube then?
Like, I think they went into it a little bit last episode, and since it's been a month since we've watched and recorded it, I'm not 100% sure. It was explained, you know, because they Maddox sent Dodge to Earth to infiltrate essentially the Daystrom Institute and sent Soji to the artifact so she could uncover something. And I don't remember the details of what she was to uncover off the top of my head, but I know there was a specific reason why she was sent there.
I don't know. I was just thinking about that when rewatching it. Like, why exactly was she there? Like, what was the point of that in the storyline? Like, I can understand with the Daystrom Institute, speaking how, you know, Mattis worked there and he was kind of suspicious, and then he, you know, had disappeared, so he would want somebody to infiltrate it, but this one's just kind of confusing for me.
Yeah, and with her, I think because she's working in the Borg Reclamation Project, it has something to do with that. Maybe trying to understand where they are with that, or I don't know. I'm not 100% sure on the details. We get explained to it briefly in episode 5, and maybe in later episodes. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, you know, Picard, let's getting back to the actual scene. Picard searches up what was going on with all records related to the Borg, the cube, the artifact. And then there was one image to where you see him as Locutus, and they kind of frame over the picture of him as Locutus. And, you know, Picard kind of has a freak out of having to go back to a Borg ship. So, you know, what I'm curious about is, and I know this is going to kind of sound harsh, but when did Picard kind of become a pussy? Have you noticed that Picard's kind of been more of a pussy? He hasn't been as strong or tough as he was in The Next Generation?
Yeah. And I think part of it has to do with his older age, probably his condition that he has with his mind. And he's probably just deteriorating a little bit. And, you know, that causes him. And it might be one of those things where, because he wasn't working with the Borg or working against the Borg in some of the episodes of TNG, you know, it's kind of an out of sight, out of mind. And now he has to actually physically go back onto a cube.
Well, I mean, he had in the last time that we saw Picard dealing with the Borg was in the movie First Contact, and he hated the Borg. I mean, like, you even have one of the, like, a very famous soundbite of him yelling no and shattering all his little ships, you know, because he just wanted to destroy the Borg. Well, how did he go from that, like, from pure hatred of the Borg, you know, hating him for what they did to him, to, you know, being terrified of him?
I don't know. It just might be one of those things where he doesn't want to be back on the ship, where he just would rather not be on the cube than on the cube.
I don't know. For me, it almost just seems like...
seems out of character.
Well, yeah. It seems like the writers didn't understand the character. And they didn't understand that character development with him. And they went in a direction that they have not gone in the past. And it kind of doesn't make sense to me.
Could have been.
Because, I mean, Picard, when you watch The Next Generation, like, he's the captain. Like, you don't fuck with him when he tells you what to do. And in the show, they kind of been portraying him as a little, you know, he has kind of a pussy. And I understand that, like, he's got, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome, but I figured they'd be able to deal with that in the 25th century.
But after that scene, you get a very interesting episode where, or not episode, but scene where, I won't say a filler scene because you do kind of get some information. But it's Rios working out. He's working with the soccer ball, working on some ball handling skills and whatever. And then Girardi comes in, I guess, horny as horny can be after killing Maddox. And
she wants
ready
to work on her ball handling skills.
I know. She's ready to pounce. She is ready to pounce on some huevos.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, she says that she has the word, or she was a superhero, or she had a superpower. And that was being able to sense mistakes as it's happening, as she's about to go ping him.
Yeah.
So what would her superhero name be? I'm thinking kind of like a Black Widow, since she just killed the last guy she used to bang and about to bang this guy.
Yeah, could be. Since Black Widows do that kind of thing. Talking about the spider, not necessarily the Marvel character.
Right.
I mean, but if, you know, if the shoe fits kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's, you know, she's telling him, she's opening up. I have the superpower. I can sense mistakes while I'm making them. I have this loneliness and emptiness. And I was like, well, I think Rios is about to fill that emptiness. And he's got a sausage with her name on it.
Oh, yay.
So that's funny. I'm pretty sure he roasted that weenie.
I hate to say it. It's not uncharacteristic of Star Trek universe to have everybody banging each other.
No, not out of line at all.
Mm-mm.
Nope, sex is an underlying theme of Star Trek. It
really is.
So, is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a filler scene, a scene that probably could have done without, but it was kind of humorous to watch, unintentionally humorous. But I got a kick in it. Watching it, because it just seemed out of place, and, you know, she was obviously ready to jump his bones.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was just more of a kind of development of, you know, a character development, a subplot within it. Oh, now the doctor and the pilot start banging. Yeah. Let's just throw that in there for kind of a subplot and character development.
Yep, but after that scene, you do get a really important scene after this, where Rizzo and Narek are talking, and she's ready to abandon his plan. And then he lays pretty much all his cards on the table. She's like, no, I got her. I got her in the check position. We're two moves away from having her at checkmate and figuring this shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's describing it to her that, you know, she dreams. And why is it dream? Why would an android or a synthetic ever dream? And Narek describes it as a vulnerability. It's essentially her synthetic mind and her human mind reconciling. And it's now he's ready to pounce on this vulnerability and figure out where their homeworld is and figure out where they need to go to accomplish their mission.
You know, I noticed two things from the scene. One, you know, he is obviously the smarter of the two siblings. Like, I think he's the smarter. Narek is the smarter of the two.
Well, I think Narek, yes, he is very smart. He's playing the long game, but he's also very patient. Rizzo is just, she wants results now. And Narek's playing the long game where, you know, he's exploiting Soji and he's finding out what makes her ticks and what's going on and that she dreams. And now he's playing the long game and he has her on the ropes. He's ready to finish her, even though he's probably finished in her plenty of times. But yeah, you do. I wouldn't say that he's the smarter of the two, but he's definitely methodic, and he thought out this plan, and he's willing to be patient and play the long game to get the results where Rizzo just wants, she wants results quickly.
Yeah, and then that's kind of where we start to see the title of the episode.
Yeah, because he is fidgeting with what looks like a Rubik's Cube, but it's like a Romulan puzzle box that you kind of have to open in certain sequences, and you have to be patient with it. You have to understand what makes it tick to open this specific box.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where we see it.
Yeah, there's a tie back to the Rubik's Cube, because we honestly didn't put 2 to 2 together until we started recording this episode.
I know, I didn't either. I really didn't.
But another thought I had while watching this, in previous episodes, we've said they're siblings. And it got me thinking, they're both within the same organization of the Tal Shiar, which is the Jat Vash. What if they're not really siblings? What if that's just what they call them? Like Navy SEALs or, you know, people in the military, they consider their comrades their brothers. So what if they're not really brother and sister, but they're, air quotes, throwing up, you know, their siblings because they're within the same organization, so they call each other brother and sister?
I mean, they could be, but I mean, like, in previous episodes, I pointed out the fact that she seems kind of hot and handsy for him. You know, waking him up in bed, she seemed pretty handsy with him while in bed. Not like what a sister would do. Unless, you know, if she's from Alabama or something.
Alabama Romulans. Mm-hmm. But that's where I got the thought that she seemed a little too into him. And that's what kind of made me think, well, maybe they're not really siblings. It's just what people within the Jat Vash call each other.
I don't know. They were talking about Romulan taboos later in the episode. So you never know. Maybe they could be brother, you know.
Could be.
Alabama Romulans.
Could be. But we'll come to that. The next thing, you get a lot of important scenes here back to back, because you get that one with Rizzo and Narek, and then you get another one where Picard pulls in Raffi to call in a favor for him in order to get his diplomatic credentials so he could be a special envoy and beam onto the cube and talk with Hugh and try to find Soji.
Yeah. I don't know. And, like, the lady that she was talking to, she was definitely a captain. From the pens, but she looked familiar. Like, I don't know where I've seen her from, but like, she looks familiar. Almost like the chick from Suicide Squad who played.
No, that is not the girl who. That is not the lady who played Amanda Waller in Suicide Squad.
No, but what I was thinking was her and another actress, and like almost like their kid, but I can't remember what the name was. Yeah. I don't remember, but I mean, know. She looks familiar. Her. I don't know. I recognize it, but I just don't know from where. But I just love how there was just subtle jabs being thrown from Raffi to Picard while doing that audio. And it wasn't even subtle. It was just like...
intentionally, like, you know, he's all ego. You know Picard. He's so Starfleet that they probably still have brochures with his picture on it. Oh, yeah, she was throwing him out there. She is not in a good place with Picard right now.
No.
And she's hammered as fuck doing this.
Yeah, she's just not in a good place, period. Like, that really bugged her, you know, what happened with her kid. All right, so one of the things that I was curious about is, you know, Narek meets up with Soji and tells her that he's been tracking her calls with his mother, and that every single time that she calls her mother, it only lasts 70 seconds, every single time. Now, what I'm curious about this is why did Soji not take that as, why is this motherfucker creeping on my phone calls?
Yeah, I don't know why she reacted the way she did, because he pretty much tells her, hey, all your phone calls come up as anomaly through our records. They only last 70 seconds and they're only going to one person. What the fuck's up with that? And she's like, no, that's not right. You're wrong.
And she just like, she calls her mother every day, but she doesn't bother to try calling her sister.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's a little odd how that plays out.
Yeah, especially since they're supposed to be like close sisters.
I'm sure twins don't have to talk to each other all the time, but
I mean, I'm sure they do. I mean, I know a lot of twins, and I know that they're usually inseparable.
Maybe because they're android twins, they don't really give two shits.
I don't know if that would really make a difference, because they don't know that they're androids.
Yeah, but their programming can make it to where they don't, you know, they just call mom instead of calling each other.
Well, I mean, that's what I don't get, is why do they go to so much trouble into making them believe that they're human when already writing in, like, sub-protocols for their programming like that, for her to fall asleep after talking with her, you know, air quotes, mother for 70 seconds every night. You know, why go to so much trouble?
It seems like there's a reason for the mother to be around, because Dodge has the same problem where she falls asleep when she's on the phone with him. So it might be one of those things where their programming tells them to call mom when they need the body to rest.
And then who's on the other side? Who's the mom? Like, is that just like a pre-programmed thing, or is there like somebody actually there as the mom?
No, I think it's a, what's the best way to describe it? Like a artificial intelligence with a face. So they're calling this number, and anytime that number rings, artificial intelligence, and they kind of, you know, create a face to go with it, and that's all they're talking to. They're not talking to a person, they're just talking to an AI. Because that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, that would be a...
But it's one of those things, they probably made them so human that way, if they knew they weren't, they probably would have slipped and spilled the beans, or, you know, it probably would have been easier to discover.
I mean, they did slip up anyways. Remember her sister, when she called the mother and the mother told them, go back to Picard, you know, she slipped up.
Well, yeah, the AI slipped up. But I meant Dodge and Soji, the reason they don't know, they make them as human as possible and make them believe they're human, is so that they, you know, they can play arrogant, like they didn't know. You know, this time, you know, if you don't know something, you can't spill the beans because you don't know it. Whereas if they knew they were androids and then they were trying to fit in with the humans, they might be more able to slip up and reveal themselves without meaning to, versus not knowing at all. If they believe they're human, they're going to discard and discredit anyone who tries to say they're not until can be proven otherwise.
Hmm. That's interesting. I don't know.
You've just been hit with logic, kind of.
Sort of.
We'll call it drunk-ish logic.
It's always the most entertaining logic, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's the logic that makes sense until the next morning. So after that scene where Soji, you kind of get a cut of scenes because Picard finally beams on to the Borg cube, where he kind of has a panic attack, and some XBs save him from falling wherever into a endless Star Wars abyss that, you know, for some reason on the Borg cube. But that's where you see him and Borg, or not Borg, Hugh for the first time. And it's kind of a nice feeling being like, oh yeah, these are two classic characters. You're seeing them again for the first time, I guess.
Well, we've seen Hugh before. I mean, this is the first time we're seeing them together.
Yeah, and that's what I meant. This is the first time we're seeing Picard, at least that I can recall. We're seeing him interact with someone from the next generation.
All right.
You know, before it's been all new characters, at least to us. We haven't seen him interact with anyone from, you know, next generation.
Right. Yeah. I think you're right. I think that is the first.
Yeah, unless you want to count Data, but I mean technically Data's in dreams and stuff, so
yeah,
you couldn't really count that.
No, you really can't, so.
But you get that cut where Picard is, you know, Hugh obviously knows that if Picard is on the cube, something's wrong and that he needs help, and he's like, I'm willing to help. And then you get a cut to a scene, an interesting scene, where
they do Soji the,
I'm talking about where Soji is trying to figure out how old she is. She wakes back up from her brief conversation with her mom, and then she has this device that I guess could carbon date things, and it's finding out everything is 37 months, about 37 months old.
Yeah, and I kind of wrote that down in my notes, like thinking, what, she just so happens to have a carbon dater there? But then again, it is the future, and she is a scientist on a Borg research cube called the Artifact. So, okay, maybe it's not that far-fetched that she might have one, a carbon dater there.
Yeah, and I just thought it was interesting that it was so, you know, like I said, I would understand her having one in her lab, but in her quarters and just randomly having a carbon dater there, that seems oddly convenient.
Well, I mean, maybe she just works from recorder sometimes.
But, I mean, even in her line of work, I still don't see the need of a carbon dater.
Yeah, I don't know either. Did she carbon date herself?
Yeah, she does end up carbon dating herself and finds out that it says she's only about 37 months old.
Which is about, what, three years and a half years?
3 years, 1 month.
Is it?
12 months in a year, come on.
Oh, yeah, 36, yeah, so... Okay. I don't know why I was thinking 3.5. I think I was thinking 32 when doing the math, and I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
I'm done with school though. Like, I already did all my math and did all that shit, and I'm done for the semester. I'm ready to not think.
Yeah, but in this part of the episode, we're getting it's quick 30-second or 45-second scenes where it, you know, cuts to her having her panic attack, and then it cuts back. Hugh shows Picard the Borg Reclamation Project, where they're kind of bringing back some of these Borgs and kind of reintegrating them and giving their freedom from the collective.
And then they're kind of going back and forth trying to find Soji. And then they eventually have Soji meets up with, why is his name slipping for some reason?
She finds Narek for some reason.
Narek. Yeah. Or no, Narek goes into her quarters after the freakout, remember? And then he convinces her to do a Romulan ritual called the Zalmak, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zalmak. And she's like, wait, isn't that like taboo for Romulan? I'm like, well, wait. Like, so what? This is supposed to be like anal for Romulans or something like that? Like, I mean, like the walking around doing some rituals supposed to be really private? Okay.
I mean, well, I think. Okay. There are other taboos than anal. Yeah. And then they were saying, what Soji was saying was that this is taboo for non-Romulans.
To help you understand what is happening, it's a traditional Romulan practice, a form of meditation.
The Zalmak. I've read about it. I thought it was taboo to non-Romulans.
It is.
Oh.
So for a Romulan, it's not taboo. It's something that really helps them. But for non-Romulans, it's kind of taboo. It's just, you know, walking the path or whatever.
Oh, well, I think it's just because when she said it, she just said it like, isn't that taboo for Romulans? So I'm thinking like, what? That's supposed to be like weird or private or like shit that they don't talk about, I guess.
I guess you missed the non-Romulan part, or the non in front of Romulan.
I guess so.
Because I'm pretty sure that's what she said.
It could be I just missed it then.
Yeah, but when Picard and Hugh are running around the cube, I'm waiting for someone to be like, hey, that's motherfucking the cutest. What the shit? You know, or just someone to react, being like, holy shit, that's the cutest.
No, what do you mean? They do. They have that moment.
Yeah. They're running to find Soji after her quarters, and one of the ex-Borgs or ex-Bees is like,
yeah, pokes his head around the corner like, the cutest?
Yeah. But I was writing for like a, hey, that's motherfucking the cutest.
I mean, you know, these guys can barely talk, let alone be like, hey, it's that motherfucker Locutus.
That motherfucker who abandoned us.
You know what they should have done then? They should have gotten Samuel L. Jackson to play that role. Motherfucker.
Right. Motherfucker. Motherfucker. What are you Locutus doing back? Yeah, they should have done that. Just a quick snippet. You know, let's throw that in there and just be like, motherfucker.
Motherfucker. Yeah, that would be a good one.
Listen, you just got old as shit.
they all did.
Yeah.
They all got pretty old.
So they decide to do, during this, what is it, Zalmak? Zalmak?
Yeah, Zalmak.
It was weird because they were just in like a yoga studio and
it was almost like lucid dreaming.
Yeah, he was kind of talking her through some stuff, and it was kind of, like you said, lucid dreaming, where they're just playing the dream back while she's awake, and she's describing it, walking around a little painting on a wooden floor that's like a little path she has to follow.
With little lamps.
Yeah, I was thinking, they look like old school Japanese lanterns, and I was like, this is supposed to help unlock her mind, but apparently it works,
because
they are able to walk her through her dream and discover, hey, she's knows more than she was leading on. And, you know, they find out that they need to be searching for a planet with two moons in constant electrical storms.
Yeah.
So then that's when Rizzo runs off to do that search. And then Narek kind of opens his impossible box and tries to kill her with some, I guess, radioactive or.
Yeah, the Rubik's Cube of Death.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm thinking he farted in the cube and then opened it up, and that was going to kill her. Romulan farts are actually poisonous, so that's what that was. And apparently red and quite abundant. So he must have had some crazy Mexican food the night before in order to pay that off.
Hey, you know what? Hashtag tacos and track.
Hashtag tacos and track.
Yeah, but you notice that shit moved, like, super slow. And, like, I thought it was, like, a gas, but apparently it was a radiation. And it was a very slow-moving radiation that looked exactly like gas.
Yeah, well, when you have radioactive farts, I guess it's just, that's what happens.
Yeah. I mean, like...
It moves slowly, and it's pinkish-purple.
Silent but deadly.
Yeah, exactly.
But what I don't get is how, does he expect this to kill her? Like, how is it gonna kill her? She's not exactly human, so poisoning her I don't think would work. So yeah, but, like, is this radiation supposed to, like, blow her up or something? Like, what's the point of it?
If she's human enough, maybe it'll work. I don't know his logic. He obviously, when she's trying to bust through the floor, one of the guards is like, hey, let's get in here, or he starts to open the door and he's like, no, the radiation, we can't go in there, my fart is deadly. And then she escapes.
Yeah, so she couldn't open the door, but she can break through the floor.
Well, I don't think she activated until she started, like, punching the floor.
Yeah,
once she realized, hey, this is it, she activates and is able to punch through a floor and move through several levels to escape.
Yeah, and then she was kind of trusting there, you know, when she busts through, she just so happens to find Picard and Hugh, who were looking for her, and he's able to convince her that he's a friend and that she should come with him and help him, and she seems to follow him pretty trustingly after, especially getting burnt over by Loverboy over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, Loverboy really stuck it to her, but you really see that Loverboy...
Well, we knew he stuck it to her multiple times. So, I mean, it's no different this time.
Yeah, but this time it wasn't in a good way.
No, she got fucked over in the bad way this time.
Yeah, she really did. But Loverboy was, he was having some real emotions and really having to fight this.
Yeah.
These actions he was taking.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you think he actually cared for her?
Yeah, he had to. You know... I guess the plan he went through was kind of a double-edged sword where he was able to accomplish this mission, but he also, you know, cut himself because he did develop feelings. He did feel bad for what he was going through.
Well, I mean, all I got to say to that is hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Especially since she gets away, he needs to watch his back, especially from an android who's just figuring out that she's a fucking badass.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think
that's all I had to say about that. Okay.
Yeah, she escapes in a pretty cool way too, because Hugh is able to lead both of them to the Queen's quarters. The Queen's room.
It's a bailout chamber for the Queen. It's a Sakaaran technology. I don't remember what it was called, but I remember Sakaarans was actually a species from Star Trek Voyager. And that's actually from an episode. And what it would do is it's kind of a folds space to where it basically just like takes one point, takes another point, folds it like a sheet to connect them. And you can almost just like step through a portal up to 40,000 light years away.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. It's a doorway or a portal where its maximum range is 40 million or 40,000.
40,000.
It's a shit ton of light years.
Yeah, and 40 million's like four galaxies away.
Well, whatever. So, you know, they step through this portal they're getting ready to step through this portal when Eleanor comes in and starts slashing up some of these Romulans that are on their ass.
Yeah.
I was like, that's pretty badass. He's quickly becoming my favorite character because he's the most Jedi-like in all of Star Trek.
He really is. He's even got the robes and everything.
Yeah. So he's...
just throwing some lightsaber sound effects in with the sword.
Yeah. Yeah. And then pretty much, there you go. You got a Jedi in Star Trek. That's what we needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, at least he's courteous and saying, please, my friend, choose to live.
Yeah, for real. Where in Star Wars, they'd just be like, hello there. Hello there? Yeah. Hello there. Yeah. Whatever. I'll take a screen cut. I'll cut that out.
You gotta keep working on that.
I had it down, but under pressure I can't do it. Hello there.
Hello there.
Hello there.
Hello there.
Okay, that's enough. We gotta finish this episode. But right, they step through the transport and they head to a planet called Nepethine. Nepethine.
Yeah. I think so. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, and then the episode closes with...
Drop your weapons! Shut up!
Please, my friends, choose to live.
I regret your choice.
So, Chris, what did you think of this episode? Did you like it?
Yes, I liked it because it had some action. It had good, development of the storyline. We're really starting to see, hey, she's figuring out that she's becoming an android. You know, the boyfriend's now trying to kill me. And then this old guy who comes out of nowhere says, I'm here to help. I know your sister. Let's get moving. And, you know, it's finally getting to where we've hit that turning point, to where we're finally at that point where, okay, finally he meets her. Finally they get through the trying to figure out what the hell is going on, figure out where they're at after six episodes of, you know, them just setting up what's going on for this episode. And then, I mean, but it's one of those things to where one of the things I really don't like is how it seems unnecessary. A lot of the ways that they're stretching out the storyline, this storyline almost seems like they could have just done it as a single episode of how Star Trek should be done. And it just seems like they took one of the ideas that they had and are just stretching it out for a 10 episode season.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that's one of the gripes, one of the criticisms of the show.
And then Picard just kind of seemed like a pussy in this one. And I wrote that down in my notes a couple times, like, Picard's not this big of a pussy. He's a tough guy. You know, he's very strong-willed, strong mentally individual. And, you know, to see him portrayed like this, it's kind of disheartening. So, I mean, yeah. I would rate it, you know, probably a 2.5 out of 5, 5 out of 10. Hmm. Good. Hmm. It was all right. Not great.
Yeah. Yeah, I ended up liking this episode. It drew me in more than some of the previous episodes, where this episode has a 55-minute runtime, and it went by really quick, in my opinion. And like you said, you get a lot of good information, you get a lot of good action in it. There's an unnecessary scene, but we get to poke fun of it since Rios gets to lay some pipe. And I think overall it was a good, not great episode. You do get some of the nostalgic factor of kind of seeing Picard as the cutest when he's doing his search, and then seeing Hugh again and Picard meet up with a character that he's previously interacted with for the first time since TNG.
Yeah. So
I think overall, in my opinion, it's one of the better episodes of the season. Like I said, not great, but I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a bad episode. I just don't like the direction that the series has been taken. I'm just, you know what I mean? It just doesn't feel like Star Trek.
Yeah. So, yeah, I get that.
But, I mean, as a show, I mean, it was still an entertaining episode. Like, I found it very, very entertaining. It just doesn't have that Star Trek feel to me.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe the last couple episodes can give me a little bit, more hope.
Yeah, hopefully. So. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill
it. Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, hot knife!
Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
Alright, well, Steve, what do we have in store for next week?
Next time, we'll be going over Star Trek Picard Season 1. Episode 7, entitled, well, it's the name of that planet, so Nepethine, your guess is as good as mine. I know they said it in the episode, but I'm going with Nepethine.
Nepenethe? It's like, it's N-E-P-E-N-T-H-E. It's,
I think it's Nepethine.
Nepenthe? Nepenthe?
Something like that. But this is the episode where Picard goes to Troy and Riker's retirement home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't read the synopsis this time, but
we finally get to see Riker and Troy. Mm-hmm. Start seeing some other characters from the TNG.
Yes, so I'm looking forward to watching this one.
Yes, I am too. I am very excited to see this one.
That'll do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High. Please join us next time as we continue to discuss Star Trek Picard.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going on Twitter with hashtag Talkers and Trek and hashtag Deep Space High.
And let us know how we're doing by giving us an iTunes review. And if you love what you're hearing, please feel the fear,
bitch. Subscribe.
Feel the fear and subscribe and share so we can get more listeners. I'm Darth Steven.
And I'm Chris. And until next time, live long and prosper.